Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Linux Lads 2020. That makes it sound like some sort of cool sci-fi show from the 60s, which is why 2020 is going to be a good year. I am, of course, Shane.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.
That's Connor with a nice rousing tune for us. So, yes, you are listening to the Linux Lads. It's the only Linux podcast that puts the toilet roll the right way around. That's a fact.
How long were you sitting on that one?
This year we're going to begin the madness anew. We're going to begin the madness anew with an outward eye, I think, this year, because it's, you know, it's January. A lot of people get sad during January, but personally, I don't know. I like January because everything's kind of starting up again. You know, we're starting from scratch. It feels like a blank page. So it's kind of, you know, that's the optimist in me. So leading on from that, we're talking about what we predict and what we see for Linux in 2020. So this is always interesting because, you know, the troll one is always the year of the Linux desktop, isn't it? And I think that's more of a meme at this stage than an actual thing that people think is going to happen.
What do you mean? Like, it hasn't happened yet? Or, I don't know. It's a stupid meme, really. I don't really care what people use. So, I mean, I do, but I don't. So, as listeners would know, I actually don't think everybody should be using computers anyway, because they are quite a specific and complicated tool. And like, as I see it, there are people who would always want to use a very specific tool. Like, I was interviewing a person for a position today, and they got asked, would you rather work on a Windows machine or a Linux machine? And he answered, basically, a user would always obviously choose Windows because it's more user-friendly, because nobody wants to type in commands. I think that's quite normal, an opinion between people, among people, that, you know, computers are difficult and Linux doubly so. And maybe, you know, as long as there's enough users of Linux to keep making it better and better, then it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't have to break through on the desktop. It doesn't have to break through on mobile for me. I mean, it's kind of fine the way it is. It's chugging along nicely. So we're always getting some new goodies. There's always something exciting happening in the community. There's always more devices coming along with Linux on them. So, you know, there's always that shit in the pipeline. So personally, I'm looking forward to 2020. I think there's going to be a few cool things. I don't think there's going to be anything, you know, groundbreaking. I don't really think there ever is. I mean, but like, you have the likes of the Raspberry Pi a few years ago. That was quite a big one for Linux because it just made it so accessible and affordable to run a Linux machine. Like, you know, a standard almost. Like, Raspberry Pi and Linux were bosom buddies. So, you know, you have things like that. You have projects that sort of ride the wave, or Linux rides its wave. I don't know. Mike, you have written here, Mike has no predictions, but he has plenty of wishes. What are some of those wishes?
Well, I'm incompetent in terms of predictions. Like, so I can't basically tell you if Canonical is going to get IPO'd, or I don't know, ZFS is going to be available in every single distro together with Wayland. But I know what I'd like to see in the year 2020. I would like to see basically Firefox overtaking Chrome in performance. I'd like to see LibreOffice kicking the ass of Excel. I would like to see the Linux Steam Gaze leaving, like, Windows Steam Gaze in the dust. And I do realize that, contradictorily to what I said before, all of these things need a good solid user base for them to happen. So, you know, I said before that I don't really care if people use Linux as long as there is enough of them, but there should be hopefully enough of people caring about Linux to make this all happen, because what we have is fantastic. And it can be still so much better. So I just want, if I was to, you know, there's always people when they make predictions, they are asked to make them so that they are measurable. So if I were make to, if I were make to make, if I were to make measurable wishes, it would be, it's so that continuously Firefox is eating less RAM and rendering websites faster than Chrome. I would like to see LibreOffice being able to faster process more gigabytes of information than Excel, and somehow that's not measurable, but being a bit more user-friendly, at least to me. And I'd like to see Steam games having a higher frame rate, even though personally I don't really game at that level, but I would like to see us outperforming Microsoft Windows and the Mac. You know, I would like to see, what I would like to see as well is Apple fanboy of the highest caliber being given a laptop with KDE Plasma on it, and him immediately after that giving back his Apple fanboy card and switching to Linux, because that's how good it is. So yeah, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, a guy can wish. So
when it comes to Archer KDE, you're just ever the optimist.
Well, I've been an OpenSUSE for a while, and I'm still an optimist. Even you know, and KDE is, and I've tried, to be honest, I've tried GNOME. I had some issues with running a game, so I installed PopOS, and KDE in terms of usability for me is not as good as GNOME. I just keep using KDE because I do. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that KDE on its way to overtaking macOS will also overtake GNOME. Some people say that the GNOME interface is actually better than the macOS one. And I realize that I'm talking from a point of view of a person who has liked this paradigm of that all of these things represent. But, yeah. Somebody say something, because I've been rambling on for a long time.
Yeah, Connor, you're like not saying much over there.
I think my eyes glazed over a bit. Sorry. I was looking down through that article that Mike has put in the show notes there, which is the Inspiration, which is an OMG article.
Oh, that was Shane. That wasn't me. You cannot pin that one on me, mate.
Okay. Well, one of you fuckers put it in. I don't know who. You didn't put your name against it, so I don't know. Some of them are quite good. The ones that stick out to me is lightweight heavyweights. So in that they highlight certainly in the screenshot they highlight Zorin OS Lite, which is running XFCE. And the reason why that kind of sticks out to me is because I'm currently running Manjaro, and its this default desktop environment is XFCE. And I think I actually mentioned that a couple of episodes ago, and even though we took a break, and I'm still on it. I mean, it's a case of it hasn't gone away. It's still solid. It's still very responsive. So there could be something in 2020 that the quote unquote more lightweight desktop environments could get more into the limelight. I'm finding XFCE to be quite solid, particularly since its most recent 4.14 release.
I actually recently came into the possession of a Lenovo ThinkPad for quite cheap, and I got one for me and the girlfriend, and from a lad in the Linux group, actually, so shout out to him, Linux community, Dublin Linux community, and and
getting your plug keys on
dublinlinux.org. So yeah, cheap laptop anyway. And
do you know, you made it sound like dublinlinux.org sold cheap laptops, right?
Yeah, kinda. forget about, that's not what I meant. But yeah, I was messing around with like music and stuff, and I bought like a little MIDI keyboard, and I was using LMMS, Linux Multimedia Software. I actually can't remember, but it's cool. It's like just an electronic music thingy, like where you put samples in loops and you create synth sounds, and then you play them on your little keyboard, and it's really fun. Like it's I'm not going to become a musician or anything. I just think it's a good crack, but like, I was putting Ubuntu Studio on this laptop, the Lenovo ThinkPad, and just to test it out, because I knew it was an XFCE distro as well, on top of all the cool, like, you know, creative little programs it comes with. You know, it's, I love that kind of curated distro, you know, but it wasn't about XFCE, but it was more about the stuff that comes with it. Like, I love it when they collect a certain group of types of apps together, and you know, it's like a little treasure trove. I love that shit. And but yeah, XFCE impressed me, like, really good. I don't know, like, I don't have anything profound to say about it, because it just kind of stays out of your way. It's very simple, it just does the job, and it doesn't slow down, it doesn't get in your way at all. I mean, you know, it's a bit fugly in parts, but you know, whatever. That's fine. You can kind of get used to it. It's fugly, but it's unobtrusive. So,
There's certain distros. I'm sure. Zubuntu and Ubuntu Studio and the Manjaro, which I'm running at the moment, they do a good job of theming the default XFCE experience. And so, the way I describe XFCE is, yeah, it's simple, it's functional, and it gets out of your way, but it's super snappy, it's super responsive, especially, I'm not saying that on that anyway, that anything Ubuntu based is not responsive, and others, Zubuntu, I've used it quite a few times, certainly very snappy and responsive, but for some reason, anything that's based off Arch just seemed to be that much more responsive. I don't know if it's any... I'm not the most technical person, as I'm sure anyone who's listening to this will... Or anyone who's met me and anyone who's listening to this will be able to tell me. I'm not the most technical person in the world. But... So I've no idea what's going on in the background. That is making it this more responsive. Or it could be complete another placebo effect. It might not actually be measurably more responsive at all. But for me, anything that's based off Arch just seems more responsive to me.
Yeah, I do get that. It's just the problem with Arch-based distros for me always came when it was update time. Because because of the bleeding edge release model, you'd sometimes get packages that kind of fuck things up a little bit. And you'd kind of wouldn't know how to do it. And I wasn't kind of... Like, I could have researched all the commands to, like, roll back updates and stuff like that, but I just couldn't be arsed. Like, I just couldn't.
Yeah, it's definitely not for the brand new Linux user. For example, even though I'm running Manjaro, which is some people will nearly describe as Arch with training wheels or, like, kitty gloves or whatever, but it's the balance that I like. But even then... there was a pop-up that came up that said, oh, you were on the 5.3 kernel, there's now the 5.4 kernel, do you want to upgrade? I'm like, yeah, sure, it's the latest and greatest stuff, I'll install that. And I had been using ULauncher as my kind of program launcher, and of course the version of ULauncher that I had installed wasn't compatible with the 5.4 kernel, so that means that ULauncher just wasn't working at all, like failed to launch completely. So I had to, I'm not saying it was a very much a hardship at all, but I had to resort back to using the whisker menu that comes with XFCE and using the typing searching in there. And then one time when I saw updates, I saw there was an update to ULauncher and then did the update, and then the new version went brought back functionality with the 5.4. So those kind of things where there's... It's so bleeding edge that something that they update and there'll be a package that you use, such as ULauncher, is not compatible with that update because it just hasn't updated. Those kind of things can be slightly annoying, but as long as you know that that is, those things can happen, then Arch or Manjaro is certainly has a lot of positives.
That's just depends on your appetite for fuckarsery.
Pretty much, yeah. And that's the argument against, or the argument for the snapshot distro such as Ubuntu, where they create that shit for you. In other words, they know that, okay, this package is going to work with this kernel version, and we're not going to update either one of them unless we know they're compatible with each other.
You said something there, referring to other people, that if I had another wish, it would be so that these things go away. Like, who calls Manjaro Arch with training wheels? That is so annoying. Like,
I wouldn't agree with that point of view at all. I was just throwing. I mean, yeah, there are those elitist people out there.
It's denigrating two things. It's denigrating the users, and it's denigrating a distro that is doing a damn really good job. Like, I don't know, this kind of snarky comments should just not happen anymore, because you know, there's the not Arch with training wheels. It's a full, I don't know, I want to say full body, but it's not the correct expression. It's a proper Linux distribution like any other that has got, that can be as complex as you make it. And like the people who the majority of people who don't want to spend the time for the first time or for the 10th time to install Arch from scratch, and still want to avail themselves of the Arch repos and of the AUR and of the great work that Manjaro do when they actually make Arch really like usable without too much effort, then like that's perfectly not even fine. That just is. That's the way it should be. I don't know what people have. Like, I don't know.
Well, CES is going at the moment, speaking of tech, so CES is usually where electronic manufacturers and gadget manufacturers kind of show off their wares, and they may be at the prototype stage, they mightn't be ready for production, and it could be this will be released in 6 months' time, this will be released in 12 months' time, or this is just a freaking, almost like a concept car kind of thing of, this is the shit we can do, but this is still 3 or 4 years away. Dell have actually come out with, I think it was Dell. If it's not Dell, then forgive me. But I think they came out with some very nifty ideas in relation to screens and computers. So they came out with something where it's two screens, and you can either operate the two screens almost like touch screens, and it's linked in the middle with a hinge, or it can open up like a laptop, and the second screen will display a trackpad for like mouse and stuff like that, and they have a Bluetooth magnetic physical keyboard that would just, you could just put it on top of it, and once it detects that it's on top, then like it will react to it, like the operating system will just react to it. And immediately I was thinking, that'll be cool, and but I guarantee freaking Linux would not have the drivers ready that shit. But and another one was, effectively, it looked, for want of a better word, I'll try to think of multiple examples, so I'm not picking on any particular or choosing any particular vendor, but it looked like an iPad or a Surface tablet that you're used to now, but effectively just folded in half. So it looked like a book they could open up, and the book was just all screen on the inside. So it would open up, and there's your tablet.
That whole foldable screen thing is interesting, because that's not where I saw computers going at all. Like, I never really figured that's how... I don't know. Like, you've asked me 5 years ago, what's going to be the big thing? in 2020 in terms of personal computers, I would have said it's just going to be all phones. Like other computers are just going to diminish completely, and everyone's just going to have transparent phones, and transparent TVs and bendable TVs and bendable screens around their wrist and shit. Like, I was like, that's definitely going to happen very soon. But yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I guess it's getting there. They're hinging them, which is, you know, that's halfway to fully foldable or fully like flexible screens. Like, they have, they already have the technology. It's just experimental, where it's an, a fucking LCD screen, and it's like a piece of acetate, like a page. It's insane. Like, so that stuff I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, these hinged laptops are like with the two screens, and I've seen some of those phones as well. I believe Samsung had one where those foldable phones where it's like a little, it's like a wallet with screens on either side, and you can fold it out or fold it back on itself. I was like, I don't want that. That's shite. Like would you not press the screen all the time by accident? Like, it'd get like that's just asking for trouble with that hinge in the middle. Like, that, if especially like the first generation units, like, that's going to wear out very quickly and break within a year, I'd say.
Well, at the point of this recording, so what Samsung and I believe Huawei and possibly Xiaomi have available for purchase at extortionate prices, but like, of course, it's early testing and early adapters or early adopters, sorry, not adapters, to the technology. So these are like several thousand euro or whatever, but like it, or 1500 or something like that. But it's because you're an early adopter of new technology, and they have a vertical fold, so the two screens meet each other vertically. But also, Motorola came out with their new take on the old Razr, where it's a horizontal fold, so the two phones or the two screens literally flip on top of each other and then sandwich in, just like the old flip Motorola Razr.
Really?
And I'm sure Samsung they've already shown that they have the vertical fold where it looks like a book. But they've also shown, or they've teased something very similar to what Motorola are doing, where it has the horizontal fold where it kind of flips down like a flip phone. But I'd imagine that it was already in the works, because these things take years. I mean, there's no way that they saw the Motorola thing and went, wait a minute, we should do that also. So I'd imagine that Samsung were already working on it when Motorola announced it.
I think I speak for all of us when I say that we're all probably more excited about, you know, getting Linux on a shit phone than a really cool sci-fi bendy phone that docks with everything. And like, no, I don't care anymore. I don't care.
I don't know. I'm a bit of a gadget nerd, so you can sway me with Flash as well. But obviously I would not be able to afford it.
I'm becoming an old man. I really am. I'm starting to not care about mainstream technology, and I'm starting to criticize it.
I actually do care about mainstream technology, because first it comes out, it's really shit, really overpriced and extremely proprietary, but eventually it gets to the point where we have decent, or hopefully it gets to the point where we have decent open alternatives. So, you know, imagine if you bought a computer in the 90s with Windows on it, Windows 95, and it was really pricey, really, really not very powerful, and it was all locked in by Microsoft, you know, but 20 years later, you have a really decent experience with, or great experience with Linux on that on a computer. I have high hopes for things like Mycroft, that you know, the nascent personal assistant market will produce will become big enough for people to be interested in open technologies for personal assistants. There's a budging community around like home automation in open is open standards, because especially since like a lot of the actual commercial gear in that sphere works with one another using open standards. Even Apple, and that's something, has open source part of their HomePod specs, or whatever they call it, the home assistant specs. And I am interested in technology. Like talking about CES, the Samsung was showcasing some kind of a robot that's gonna follow you around. It looks like a tennis ball with a camera on it, and
BB-8.
Yeah, but smaller and yellow. And nice. Like, if you have that, and if you have like a stand-up mirror that's actually a screen, it can take photos from behind you when you do yoga. It's not creepy at all. Like, they have a whole video that we can. I will put in the show notes, where it basically, there's a woman living with a dog in an apartment, and it kind of follows her around and takes photos of her, and it's meant to come across as like really cool. But I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, like, would I really want that? But on the other hand, if there was a piece of technology that I could just, you know, like a basically a servant, more like an R2-D2, that you can just call to do cool things, like, you know, fix the light bulb or open the window for me or do whatever, you know, fetch me a can of cider, that kind of thing, I would be all for it, you know. And plus obviously the fact that my job consists mostly of working, well, like researching the mobile phone market, so I have a big interest in it, and I have hopes. I just hope we get across this horrible lull where everything is just like it was last year, just incremental updates to things. They don't know what to do, so they smack 9 cameras on the back of a phone, because for some reason that's meant to be better than 4. And I hope we get across it, and people start, or companies will start innovating. I mean, they have to if they want to keep us spending, obviously. But yeah, so I am actually optimistic. I said something that I like that sounded what I said earlier that sounded really pessimistic, that nothing's gonna happen in 2020. And it's possible that nothing extremely good or extremely exciting is going to happen, but the time is getting ripe for it for something to come across. The market is ready for disruption again, I think.
Yeah, I think we're overdue a paradigm shift of some description. And, you know, the rising tide lifts all ships, so the more technology and software in general gets better, you know, you're going to get a lot more independent houses like Pine 64 and Librem.
Talking and, of which,
oh yes, ideal segue. Ideal's a burning topic. They contacted me over Christmas and they were like, "We didn't talk about that."
Okay, so well, I can start. Basically, what it is, this is. Or it's meant to be when it's actually a finished product. Librem 5, the phone that focuses on security by design and privacy protection by default. They say this because A, it's not running Android and iOS, which is good, but it's running their custom operating system, which is a big undertaking. And also it has got kill switches and meant to help the users to not not transmit their private information when they don't want to. So far, almost so good, except for the in-house made operating system, which I think that must have taken a lot of resources away from them. And there are actually projects they could have contributed. But basically, it's a Linux phone, so which somehow manages to be. I don't know how late they are at this point. They crowdfunded it. Was it?
I do not know the exact time scale, so I'm guesstimating off the top of my head, but I think they're about 2 years late.
Well, put it this way. I remember us talking about this at OCCAM 2018, right? But we were talking about them saying that they will release... Yeah, okay, so I remember that. So in 2018, they were crowdfunding it, and they were saying that they will release a phone and ship it in 2019, which they say they did, I think. I wouldn't say so, because the thing that they are shipping, it's not ready, it's not finished, it doesn't make phone calls, or maybe it does now, but it didn't. I don't know. It's not put together as they... It's not the finished production ready, or, you know, retail ready, or whatever they call it, product. So they've been late. That's one point. They've done it before. They've crowdfunded their computers, they shipped them late, and when they shipped them, they weren't as in the same shape. They weren't in the same shape they promised the computers would be when they... They've done this before. They crowdfunded computers, they shipped them late, and when they shipped them, they weren't to the same specs and in the same shape as they promised. So that's another problem. Third problem with it cost $749 at the moment. It was a bit cheaper, it's getting more expensive. And that, combined with the shitty specs and the shitty looks, is just that's bad. So they say, you know, it's a 3 gigabytes of memory, 32 gigabytes of storage, 1.5 gigahertz chipset, quad core with that's, I think the chipset is 2-3 years old by now. And yeah, I get it. Linux doesn't need as much resources as Android, because it's not gonna run the whole virtual machine on it. But you are selling, for the price of a new upper middle range phone, you are selling like 2-3 year old device. Like, the thing is 1.5 centimeters thick. I tried to look at GSM Arena for a phone in the whole database of GSM Arena. I tried to find a phone that thick, and I, with the same specs, so 32 gigabytes storage, 30 gigabytes of memory, and that thickness, and there was none. You know, so I'm getting a bit heated. Maybe somebody can take over.
Very briefly, what I've written down, and then I'll go into more detail later, or I'll go back and go into more detail, is I've written down a couple of points in pros, one neutral point, and then cons. And just, I wrote this down even before we were recording, so some of them actually echo some of Mike's points, but the fact that they echo Mike's points shows that these are the fundamentals of it, and this is what is annoying about this whole project. So fundamentally, it's a good idea. I agree with the open source phone idea. I mean, of course, the fundamental premise of the device is that it's an open phone. Certainly, no objections there. Kill switch is for privacy again. It's, if that is what your target audience is, and we currently exist in that area, so certainly I can certainly see where kill switches for privacy would be a good idea. My neutral point, after much deliberation and like, as I said, this thing has been going on for over a year, so we've had plenty of time to think about this and plenty of time to think about their approach. My neutral point, some might argue that this was a con, but I decided to put in as a neutral point. I'm not confident that they're going to be sustainable, unfortunately. And it really, really was difficult for me to write that down, because you want to be optimistic. You want them to be successful because you want the idea of an open source phone to be successful. It's just their implementation of it and the way they've interacted with the community has seriously pissed me off, to be frank. And I've been willing to give them a lot of rope like a lot of slack to say, they're new, they're still working this out. Yeah, all good will has gone out the window at this stage, unfortunately. 6 months ago, I probably would have still given them goodwill and just give them the benefit of the doubt, but it's gone past that at this stage. The cons, they increased it $100 to $750, so it was, I think, the price that they said to the backers was $599, and that was their special backer price, or could possibly have been slightly cheaper, could have been $550. And then they're saying, oh, but then this is for the backers and this is limited amount, which is understandable as crowdfunding, and that's the way the crowdfunding happens. And then they're saying when it goes out for general sale on our webpage, it's going to be more expensive. That more expensive was about $650. Now they're up to $750 or $749, as Mike says. Addressing that price, the only way I could see them going for the price increase would be that they're either running out of money and they have to raise revenue quite quickly, and that's the reason why they're raising the price, or they had unforeseen increase in costs on in their production line and they want to recoup some of their costs. The correct approach to do it in that instance would be, let's say I'm just throwing a figure out there, let's say they're making $100 profit on each phone, and that's on that $650, in other words, the $550 was them breaking even for the crowdfunding people. A honourable company would probably eat into that $100 profit, rather than increasing the price as much as possible. To me, it sounds like they want to keep their profit margin up. I know it sounds very cynical, but to me it did sound like they want to keep their profit margin. It could be the case of their costs increased by $100 and they're back to break even point again, and in which case they want to increase it so that they have some sort of margin in relation to it. A small bit of transparency would go a long way in that regard. If they come out and say, listen, our costs are way more than we thought it was going to be, we're going to have to increase the price. I would say, unless they're in real dire straits, I would say an increase of $50 per phone would go a long way when you do it on scale. An increase of $50 on per individual unit is a large increase. An increase of $100 is a huge increase. And one of my other points was their general PR and communications, which I kind of have alluded to already. And Mike, please take over, because I'm getting a bit passionate here.
Well, you see, the problem is exactly as you said. It's they are swearing by their by their open source principles and whatnot, but they are not an open company. They say, well, we shipped the first batch, and then it transpires that they shipped it only to the employees or whatever it was. Their estimates of when they are going to ship are really rubbish. And okay, yeah, you can make bad estimates, you can make genuine mistakes, but what annoys me no end about them, it is probably even more than just the price, is that they are on such a bloody high horse. It's so annoying to even watch their website. It just says, we invest in public interest. No, you don't. That's not public interest. It's $750. Public interest is you giving this away at cost price. Like, I know you, they are...
Or very slim margins, like $10 or $20 per phone or something.
They are talking themselves up as whatever they are. They are not a for-profit. They are some kind of a public benefit company or some, and I understand that. That's a very good idea that I don't like capitalism. Every company should be for public benefit, but like If you are selling overpriced crappy goods, deliver them late, you should not pretend you're Jesus, you know, or whatever deity you believe in. This is not on. It's like it's very hipster. Their design is very slick, except for the phones, because they look like shit.
That's entirely subjective. I mean, I am just in relation to the hardware. I'm willing to give them. So most of my objections are in relation to the price and how they interact with the community. I'm willing to give them quite a bit of slack when it comes to the hardware, because a lot of the hardware, such as the thickness of the phone, is down to their design decisions. I believe it's because they wanted the back to be removable, as in fully removable, as in you get a screwdriver. There's a video where the CEO literally unscrews the entire thing off the back. I think that's by design. They want a removable battery. I believe they have a full laptop size Wi-Fi chip or Wi-Fi component into it, which probably leads to the thickness. So that is by design, either due to circumstance or that was their design from the very get-go. So that is by design. So I'm willing to give them quite a bit of slack in relation to the physical design of the phone.
But I have a counterpoint for this. Okay, so do you have 1.5 centimeter thick and subjectively to me ugly looking Librem 5 for $750, right? So you are saying that's because they had to. Now there is this Fairphone 3, which is it's also very repairable. You can take the thing apart. It's modular, and also it's sourced as much as you can, obviously, as a phone is sourced ethically. Fairphone 3 cost €450, right? So let's say even if it was $500, that's still quite a lot less than your Librem 5. Both of these companies, it's quite nice how they are comparable. Of course, Fairphone uses Android, whereas Librem uses Linux or some kind of their version of Linux. But Fairphone shows you, at least on their website, I didn't obviously deep dive into them, and I, you know, if they were doing something really nefarious, really deep, I wouldn't know. But at least on their website, you get the information, you get what they are trying to achieve, why they are doing it. And I look at their stuff and I say, okay, yeah, I get it. It's for me still a bit expensive, but in terms of our current smartphone market, €450 is not that much for what you are getting. If let me see. Okay, Snapdragon 632 with 4 GB of RAM, 64 GB of storage, NFC, 4G, obviously, and it's repairable. Probably more than the Librem, I can't tell because I've never had either, and I never tried to fix either of them. But, like, there is... I don't believe for a second that Librem are doing the best they could with the circumstances they have. And I don't believe for a second that whatever they are saying is justifiable, like that the whole ethos of we are also pure and also cute, also cool and also ethical. No, you're not. You are just really selling overpriced old gear, right? And that's my beef of it. And talking themselves up as if they were the holiest of holies.
My slight counterpoint, my slight devil's advocate, just as you're speaking there, as you're comparing it to the Fairphone, is that the Fairphone is off the shelf components, probably because it runs Android, probably has a lot of functionality from the operating system, or the fact that Android runs in virtual machines, so it largely the hardware doesn't really matter that much. And also Fairphone don't say we're trying to open source the hardware as much as possible. So I'm willing to give Libram a small bit of slack in regards to that. They probably had to go off and research and say, okay, what is the most open components that we can fit into this phone, or if we can't open source, if it's not open source by default, can we speak to the company and see and try and persuade them to open source it, or something like that. So they probably had to pick and choose their components, which probably drove up the cost, not to the fucking degree that they're charging the phone for. So I'm willing to give them a bit of slack, not the level of slack that they're asking for.
Yeah, and this is before we get to the cherry on the cake,
it's completely and utterly fucking unjustifiable.
It's just,
I couldn't wait for this one.
Is there
almost fail me basically at this?
I'm just going to have to state it so we.
People, I love it. It's the best phone ever.
People people know what we're talking about. Is the Libram 5 USA edition of the grand total of $2,000? There's no way in fucking hell they can justify that price. I'm willing to, again, like my previous point, I'm willing to give them a hypothetical some slack here. Let's just say the phone that's built in China is now $750, and they're saying they're assembling this it's the same components, but they're assembling it in the States. The United States probably has the labor would be more because the individual people are being paid more. But putting ethics of that aside, there are inherent more costs to manufacture or assembly in the United States. So $750 for the Chinese phone. Let's say that increases, and I'm being generous here, to 1200 or 1300. How the fuck did they get to 2000?
Well, hold on, Connor. You have to account for the three characters, U and S and A. You know, they obviously believe in the founding fathers' liberal ideas, or, which is more likely, they picked up on the current wave of jingoistic nationalism and overreaching for custody of everybody and said, oh, look, people vote for Trump, so maybe if we call it USA, somebody will pay $2,000 for this. I mean, this is outrageous on so many levels. It's the same piece of crap phone that is not an item thing.
It's assembled in the States.
Don't think the original one is assembled. I don't know where the original, where the $750 one is assembled. I don't know if it's China
you're almost guaranteed it's China. It's pretty.
Well, it could be Taiwan. It could be Taiwan. Singapore. Okay, yeah, I actually looked up. They are using NX. They are using what is it called? NXP, the company. They are using. One second. NXP, yeah, components, and I think NXP have got factories everywhere. I don't know, whatever. Maybe the $750 thing is assembled in China. So
I'm willing to grant you some Asian cheap labor market ethics of that aside, but yes.
So for the bargain price of $1,250 extra dollars, you can get yourself a phone that is built in the United States, where the U.S. government, of course, never would spy on anybody. They don't have access to any, they would never even think about doing anything nefarious with people's devices. So yeah, that's a big win for anybody. I mean, actually, you know what? If somebody is daft enough to cough up $2,000 for this phone, then they deserve to pay that much, and they deserve everything they are getting in that phone, which arguably is not much.
The thing with the Libram is that I think they rode on the fact that it was a Linux phone a little bit too much, and I think, you know, maybe they didn't have the same, I think it's probably an obvious thing to say, but they didn't have the same kind of love for the community and the kind of the actual reasons that we are all in the community and everybody else is, that we kind of chat to. Like, they weren't in it for the same reasons as us. They just saw it was more like a gap in the market kind of thing. And, or maybe, you know, as you said, they're just up their own arse. I don't know. So, you know, you're not part of the open community. You're not part of the FOSS world. You're just a fucking edgelord. Like you're not actually, yeah, like, based on everything I've seen, it's like you've not actually contributed anything, really.
Well, I think it's okay. So they made a decision to make their own operating system for the phone, which questionable as it is, they probably, I assume that they contributed whatever code they made upstream, because whatever they made is open source, right? So I assume.
I would prefer a contribution be made in the right spirit. I would prefer that a company doesn't contribute to the wider, you know, ecosystem or whatever you want to call it. I would prefer they do that in the right spirit. And if they're not going to do that, then just don't do it at all. Like,
well, it is open source. I mean, the chief rival to this, which is in my point of view, a much better approach to it, which is the PinePhone. But this discussion is about the Librem 5, so I won't dwell on that too much. But the only reason I bring it up is because Postmarket OS, which is has been ported over to the PinePhone, and it has Plasma Mobile as a front end. Also, I've seen versions of the custom phone version of GNOME that Librem have been running on. Is it Fosh OS or something like that? But whatever their custom GUI, which is open source, I believe some of the Postmarket OS developers have got that GUI or desktop environment running on Postmarket OS so that it can run on the PinePhone. So it is open source. Anybody can just take it and run with it.
Yeah, but just open sourcing it for me isn't quite enough. It's more around their behavior and like a lot of the things you guys have already talked about. Yeah, it's like you want to see kind of a seat at the table. You want to be loved by the community for doing this great thing for everybody. But then if you're gonna
their approach is all wrong. They're pissing off the
community. Yeah, exactly. If you're gonna just do some dickish things and do some kind of, you know, you're going to do some, I'm not going to say outright dishonest. I'm going to stop short of saying that because I don't know. I think it's a big accusation, but and I don't know enough about what's going on internally in that company to say that myself. I wouldn't feel comfortable, but it's misguided for sure.
My guess is that they started off with good intentions and several snags have happened along the way, and rather than opening up to it and being dishonest, they probably either internally they got advice or an outsourced PR firm or legal or something like that decided to informed them or advised them to keep it all internal and be all brave face and everything, and then they just have kept going down that road where it's brave face, everything's fine, we've hit some snags but everything's fine, sorry about that, but everything's fine, rather than being completely open and transparent. And I mean snags happen. I mean, you are introducing a brand new device, so setbacks do happen, and if you're open and honest about that, I believe the community would have been a lot more forgiving than they are currently. It's just the approach is completely and utterly wrong.
I think, you know, but then they are only hurting themselves. You know, if they let the community in, the community would have helped them create a better product for less money. I mean, come on, they could have just utilized the operating systems that are already there. And I say, I know I'm not a mobile phone designer, so I don't, but I'm pretty sure, like, in my head, there is no way if you have to make the decision, do I make myself, in my small business, do I design something by myself, or do I invite the far and wide open source community to create something with me. I just, you know, in terms of cost effectivity, in terms of better product, there is no way how the letter could fail to be better, right? What did I just say? Anyway, there is no way how inviting the open source community to help them work with their product would be, and it has to be better than what they did. They basically said, everybody wait, we are working on the mounting, we are making the commandments, we are sitting around the bush, around the fire in the bush, and when we come down to you, you're gonna bow to us and spend $2,000 on our shitty phone. So
for the sake of this argument, we'll just say that the 751, the 2001, is so ridiculous that it's not even worth considering.
Yeah,
on that point, this is in relation to the words that this person said. I'm not going to mention their name. Anyone would be able to look up this person quite easily, and I'm sure anyone who's been following this story closely will know to whom we're referring to. The current or former, it's not clear if he's left or not, but knowing him, he probably has, PR officer for Librem, or community, it was PR or community manager, I forget. His official response to valid criticism of the 2000 offer or 2000 phone was, "Hey, it's not for you. Don't buy it."
For a PR
person to say that is just screams of arrogance. So it's either wholly down to that one individual person, or that is the internal culture that he was just reproducing the internal attitude. Either way, it's not a great attitude to have.
So, I think we've sufficiently given them the cat o' nine tails today. So they've had the cane from the Linux lads today, I tell you.
Fundamentally, I'll end on this, and this I'm not, just to let you know that I'm not going after them for the sake of going after them. The reason why I'm being so passionate is because I want a phone like this to succeed. So they gave me so much hope, they gave me so much promise when they first came out and when they first announced it. And the reason why I'm being so passionate about criticizing them is because how much they disappointed me. So I have a shout out for it, I'd like to mention. Something that I had heard on other podcasts, but then I came across on Twitter as well. So there's a unofficial Office 365 snap for all of you who like to snap install things. And it comes from Hayden Barnes. So fair play to you, Hayden. Microsoft have been long rumoured that they're going to be coming out with an official Office 365 port for Linux. Most likely will be an Electron wrapper. In fact, when they came out with the Microsoft Teams for Linux, they said that this is going to be the first Office app for Linux. Ooh. Wonder what that would mean, all teasing and mysterious. But fair play to Hayden. He just says, listen, this is technology that I'm familiar with. I know how to wrap things in Electron, and Office 365 have a web UI, so and it's very easy to just take a website and wrap it in Electron. So that's what he did, and he made a snap of it. So check it out, the unofficial Office 365 snap.
Nice. I like this. I like this. I know it's Office 365, but Yeah, it's always good news. I like the warm embrace of Microsoft. It makes me feel safe. I'm absolutely fucking joking. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it, but we'll say that much. So socials, as usual, we're on linuxlads.com/telegram/Twitter or at linuxlads on Twitter, probably easier to remember. Mastodon, link in the show notes. We do /Mastodon. I forget that every week. And I didn't this week. Show at linuxlads.com. If you want to email us, please email us, because nobody ever emails us. So yeah, do that, please. And then linuxlads.com/support. Is it support or donate, or do both work?
I think they'll both work. I think I did a few links there. Linux.
Anyway, the long and the short of it is, go to linuxlads.com and all of the things will be up on the header bar, and you just click and whatever you want to go to.
Please give us money.
It's support-us or support-us. I can do donate. By the time people are hearing to this, there is going to be a /donate as well if they want. That's not a problem.
Just like magic.
Yeah, just like that. It actually now works. Yeah, it works. /donate is fine. You can cut all of this out.
I won't. It sounded great.
Oh, I know.
So, thank you for joining us once again. This was a great show. Great chats going on. We said some good things. We said some bad things. But we came out the better for it in the end. Any final thoughts?
Nah.
That is the most Linux lads thing I've ever heard in my life. Nah. Thank you for joining us. Thanks as always for listening and for lasting almost 2 years at this point, guys.
Well, more like a year and a half. Come on.
I don't know.
It was summer 2018, so...
Yeah, it was either August or September 2018, yeah.
I'm going to say 2 years. Because it's 2018, it's 2018 then, and it's 2020 now. So that's 2 fucking years, all right?
That's solid maths right there.
So, yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.